two things can be true. Jesus knew Jerusalem as the holiest city in Judaism, the spiritual homeland of the Jewish people since the 10th century before the Common Era. Jesus knew Jerusalem as a center of the world where God resided. It was part of his life from his earliest memories. He loved Jerusalem. He once said, "How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. But you were not willing," he says. Two things can be true. On his way to Jerusalem, Jesus wept for the city and its people. He mourned over their brokenness and hard-heartedness. Our musical this morning, Parade, began with that flashback. A young soldier leaving the Red Hills of Georgia to fight with the Confederates, the rebels, the slaveholders in the Civil War. Some of those lines he sang, I've carved our names, Lila, in the trunk of this tree. I fight for a way of life that's pure, of the truth that must endure. Let all the blood of the North spill upon them till they've paid for what they've wrought. Take back the lies they've taught. And there's peace in Marietta. And we're safe again in Georgia, in the land where honor lives and breathes, the old red hills of home. This happened. Not once, but thousands and thousands of times, men and women fighting for the South, for the land where honor lives and breathes, the old red hills of home. And we can't rewrite history. And we can't unlive it. And we can't unsing it. I've sung it myself. Well, I've hummed along as the Indigo Girls sang it. Not on my way to war, just on my way to life. Sung along with the Indigo Girls, a Southland in the springtime. If you don't know it, look it up. It will be one of the most beautiful songs you've ever heard. Maybe we'll take Texas by the morning, light the bayou with our taillights in the night. In Georgia, nights are softer than a whisper beneath a quilt somebody's mother made by hand. With the farmland like a tapestry passed down through generations and the peach trees stitched across the land, and there's something about the Southland in the springtime, where the waters flow with confidence and reason. Though I miss her when I'm gone, it won't ever be too long till I'm home again to spend my favorite season, when God made me born a Yankee, he was teasing. That is the South. For me, it wasn't Georgia, it was Texas. The May fate, the barbecue, the fishing in the river, Dr. Pepper, chicken and dumplings, cotton fields, pecan trees. But two things are true. As much as I love the South, Leo Frank hated it. Leo was a Jew born in Brooklyn, working as a supervisor at a pencil factory in the South, hating every minute of it. Leo despised the South. He hopes when he wakes, he'll be with the people who look like him, think like him. Did I tell you this is based on a true story? Leo Frank in Atlanta, 1913. And Leo singing his heart out, "These people make me tense. I live in fear they'll start a conversation. I didn't understand that being Southern is not just being in the South. These men belong in zoos. It's like they've never joined civilization. I don't belong. I don't cuss. I don't draw. So how can I call this home?
Talk like I do, and think like I do, but then the sun rises in Atlanta again. These people make me tense. I live in fear they'll start a conversation. These people make no sense. They talk and I just stare and shut my mouth. It's like a foreign land. I didn't understand that being Southern's not just being in the South. When I look out on all this, how can I call this home? These men belong in zoos. It's like they've never joined civilization. The Jews are not like Jews. I thought the Jews were Jews, but I was wrong. I would be fine, but 4 years down the line, with every word it's very clear I don't belong. I don't cuss, I don't drawl, so how can I call this home? Home, 'cause, and I'm free of a southern breeze, free of magnolia trees and endless sunshine. Evermore, but not mine, not mine. A Yankee with a college education, who by his own design is trapped inside the land that time forgot, and trapped inside this life, and trapped beside a wife who would prefer that I said howdy, not shalom. Well, I'm sorry, Lucille, but I feel what I feel, and this place is surreal. So how can I call this home?
Does that upset anybody? Just a bit? The civilization part? The hairy palms part? There is beauty in the South, and it pulls at me like faith, like gravity, like the moon. And it is in my blood. And I respond to the heat and the hills and the lakes and the oak trees. And when I do, I don't stop to repent of my slave-owning ancestors, if I had them, of my forebears who visited genocide on the First Nations. When my Aunt Vera and Uncle Carl took me to see the Alabama Coushatta tribe in Livingston, and I brought home a miniature drum, I didn't know I was appropriating. I didn't even know how to spell it. My love of the South didn't harm anyone, I didn't think. And I didn't harbor hatred for the Northerners, though I didn't want to be one. I learned that Northerners were cold, rushed, standoffish, wouldn't give you directions, didn't know what sweet tea was, didn't know how to pronounce their R's, and left whole syllables out of words. And I didn't question it. And I surely didn't hate them for it. And I didn't think they hated me. The old-timers in Atlanta hated Leo Frank, hated the Northerners. It was 1913. It hadn't been such a long trip between 1913 and the end of the Civil War, and no wars in between during which we all pulled together. Their wounds still ached, their pride festered, their nostalgia was an ever-present reality. They hated Northerners, and they hated Jews. They had been taught that Jews killed Jesus. Wrongly taught, but taught. And when young Mary Fagan was raped and murdered, and they were scared, and they felt victimized, and they felt as much anger as their God about the injustice, it was easy to blame Leo Frank, the Jew. To frame him, to coerce others to lie about him, to lie themselves under oath. But I'm getting ahead of myself, and it might be a little difficult for you to follow. So let me take you to the funeral of Mary Fagan, a 13-year-old girl who worked in the pencil factory where Leo Frank was supervisor. Who was found brutally murdered in that pencil factory. Let me take you to her funeral. Listen to them sing. Listen carefully.
Put her in the cold. fall. I swear it don't make sense to me at all. God forgive me what I think. God forgive me what I wish. Right now, I don't know the coward's name. I don't know the bastard's face. But I swear I'd now do God. He ain't never gonna get away with what he done to me.
A fountain filled with blood, drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunged beneath that flood lose all their guilty stains. Lose all their guilty stains. The dying thief rejoiced to see that fountain in his day, and there may I, though vile as he, wash all my sins away. Two things can be true. We can worship a God who cries over Jerusalem and her hard heart, who wishes to gather those poor lost people under his wing like a mother hen gathers the chicks. We can worship that God and conflate that God with all our own ideas about honor and justice and vengeance. And we become foot soldiers in a Christian army rather than disciples. It's in our blood. We bank on heaven. We consign our enemies to hell. We grew up in it. This morning, somewhere other than here, the congregation is singing it. Blood, the hammer of justice. Those good, loving Christian people in Atlanta put Leo on trial. Decided that wrongly condemning another black man for murder, which is one of their first ideas, but they decided that wrongly condemning another black man for murder wasn't going to do them any good. They'd killed plenty of black men. But a Jew. At the trial, Lucille Frank tries to defend her husband. And he tries to offer a defense for himself. She sings to those gathered, "You don't know the man." And he sings, "It's hard to speak my heart."
You don't know this man. You don't know a thing. You come here with these horrifying stories, these contemptible conceits, and you say you understand how a man's heart beats, and you don't know a thing. You don't know this man. You don't even try. When a man writes his mother every Sunday, pays his bills before they're due, works so hard to feed his family, there's your murderer for you. And you stand there spitting words that you know aren't true. And you don't know this man. Not from me, not from anyone who knows him. Not a morsel, not a crumb, not a clue. I have nothing more to say to you.
It's hard to speak my heart. I'm not a man who bears his soul. I let the moment pass me by. I stay where I am in control. I hide behind my work, safe and sure of what to say. I must seem hard. I know I must seem cold. I never touched that girl. You'd think I'd hurt a child, and yet I'd hardly seen her face before. I swear, I swore we barely met. These people try to scare you with words I've never said. I know it makes no sense. I swear I don't know why. You see me as I am. You can't believe I'd lie. You can't believe I'd do these deeds. A little man who's scared and blind, too lost to find the words he needs. I never touched that child, God. I never raised my hand. I stand before you now, incredibly afraid. I pray you understand.
They convict him. A unanimous verdict. Leo is sentenced to death. So many inconsistencies in the testimonies, so many people lying willingly, so many people afraid of becoming victims themselves if they speak the truth. They send him to prison. to await his hanging. But one of those responsible for Leo's death, for his death sentence, has a change of heart. Governor John Slayton, uncomfortable with the trial's rush to judgment and the national criticism that it triggered for what ultimately amounted, it seemed, to a state-sanctioned hate crime, the governor commutes the sentence from hanging to life imprisonment. But before you breathe a sigh of relief, the good, God-fearing people in the town need their bloodlust satisfied. And they kidnap Leo from his work camp. And they hang him. And by the time the curtain falls, you'll find yourself wondering if we've made any progress with regards to race and religion in the 110 years since this story took place, especially in the South. I was talking to a good friend last week. How are you even surviving in your state? She asked. Your state. She's 50 and she lived 45 of those years in Texas. My state. Is it mine? Doesn't feel like mine. Often feels like people who think and feel like I do are enemies of the state. You should move, she said. I should. But I won't. For a million reasons. But one of them is, well, let me say one more thing about Parade, the musical. The governor's attack of conscience and the commutation of Leo's sentence isn't totally about a man getting in touch with his higher self. No. It's about Lucille Frank, Leo's wife. Early on in the musical, we laugh when Leo, the misplaced Brooklynite, says to his wife Lucille, "For the life of me, I can't understand why God created you people Jewish and Southern at the same time." I'm not going to unpack that right now, not enough time. But Lucille is not content to let her husband go to his death. And she begins to fight. And I want you to listen to the moment she realizes that her husband is powerless behind bars, but she is not. She will fight, she will work, she will scream across the whole damned South and never shut my mouth until they understand.
Do it alone, Leo. Do it all by yourself. You're the only one who matters after all. Do it alone, Leo. Why should it bother me? I'm just good for standing in the shadows and staring at the walls, Leo. Fight them strong and proud. Oh, your voice is loud. Loud enough to make it. Soon I won't be worried anymore. No, do it alone, Leo. Now there's the right idea. Make me feel as useless as you always have. Do it alone, Leo. What could a woman do? After all, so many people love you. They're dancing in the streets, Leo. Only you know how.
Alternate between wanting to leave Texas and thanking God for Florida, which is worse, or North Carolina, which is worse. But I'm not even sure that's true anymore. And I won't leave because two things are true. I love Texas and hate her. I don't want to give Texas over to the bad guys. I want Texas to be drag races and drag queens. Trans Ams and trans folks, Dairy Queens and just queens. I think we can figure out how to remember the Alamo where my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather died and tell the truth about the battles that were fought there and what they were fought over. I believe we can redeem the Rio Grande and, in doing so, redeem ourselves. And I don't want to give Texas up. She bore me. She raised me. If I wrote my life story, Texas would be as much a character in the story as my mama or my grandma or my children. I am not ready to give up. And I believe that you don't want to give up either. And I believe that's why we gather. The theme for this year's Broadway series is Amplify. And we started talking about how we need to make sure that those that have the stories to tell, those whose lives are impacted, are given the stage, are given the microphone. But one last thought. I believe that we need to amplify the gospel, the good news. If you've been paying attention this week, you've been reading a lot about small towns. And my guess is they are small towns in the South. One of the conversations that I read quickly devolved from Jason Aldean's "Try That in a Small Town" to people arguing about what a small town is. So someone posted, Matthew Shepard tried to be himself in a small town. To which someone responded, that was Laramie, Wisconsin, population over 30,000. I don't think that's a small town. And soon we found ourselves arguing over what constitutes a small town. And then we started slinging mud at Jason Aldean. Oh, he's so high and mighty. You know he left his wife after 20 years for his mistress. How quickly we can get our attention diverted. I think it's time for us to amplify the gospel. That part of Jesus that said, how often I've wanted to gather you to me like a hen gathers her chicks. Texas is not all right. Many of our states, our politicians are not all right. But we're not going to get very far if all we do is criticize them. Talk about how uncivilized they are. Give up and get out. Many of you were born in the South. Some of you are transplanted. We don't have to give it up or give it over. We need to amplify the gospel. What is good about it? Not bloodletting. Not making sure we can identify who should burn in hell. Not satisfying our blood lust. Not holding our old grudges. I'm going to close with one of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite authors, Rachel Held Evans, who left, many of you know, the evangelical tradition as life taught her more and she came to understand more. And she found herself amongst gay people and Jews and all kinds of different people, a parade of people. Here's what she said. Think of it in terms not just of the evangelical tradition that she talks about, but ourselves. I wrestled with the evangelical tradition in which I was raised, often ungracefully, she says. At times, I've tried to wring the waters of my first baptism out of my clothes, shake them out of my hair, ask for a do-over in some other community, some other state, where they ordain women, vote for Democrats, and believe in evolution. But Jesus has this odd habit of allowing ordinary, screwed up people to introduce him. And so it was ordinary, screwed up people who first told me I was a beloved child of God, who first called me a Christian. I don't know where my story of faith will take me, but it will always begin here in the South. That much will never change. Two things can be true. God loves us exactly as we are. And we can do better. Amen.